Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs to order. It is now 8:03 a.m. on Thursday, April 11th, 2019, in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Tallarico, Representative Kopp, Representative Ortiz, Representative Vance, and myself, Representative Zilkowski, Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to thank Julia Bushman, the Secretary from Records, and Doug Bridges from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. Today we will be hearing House Resolution 7, sponsored by the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs, supporting the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact. Would Grace Renee Singh, committee staff, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and give us a brief overview of the resolution.
Good morning, committee members. For the record, my name is Grace Renee Singh, staff to Representative Zilkowski and committee aide for the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs. House Resolution 7 encourages the governor to fully implement the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact. This resolution recommends continuing partnerships between the state and tribal governments throughout Alaska as it relates to strengthening child welfare in the best interests of Alaska's children. The protection and well-being of the next generation of Alaskans is important to every community, family, and leader in Alaska. As was previously presented in this committee, the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact is an historic agreement, the first of its kind between a state and tribal government. In an environment of decreased state spending, partnerships based on mutual responsibility to a shared constituency between state and federal governments will strengthen program delivery across the state, particularly in our most remote areas. Every single child deserves to be protected, loved, and nurtured, no matter where they live in Alaska. The Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact formalizes a relationship intended to maximize resources that strengthens child welfare services for more communities and families across the state. Tribal involvement and intervention in child welfare cases has already proven to be more effective and responsive to the needs of rural communities with improved outcomes. By working together, the state and tribal governments can provide a holistic approach, offering wraparound services that will provide families, foster parents, and children with the support they need. And today we have invited testimony to speak to those services, and I could be made available to questions if needed.
Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Singh, for that great overview. We will now turn to invited testimony on House Resolution 7. If Francine Eddie Jones, the Tribal Family and Youth Services Manager from Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, if you could come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your testimony.
Good morning. For the record, my Tlingit name is Costine. I'm Eagle Wolf of the Yenyedi clan of the Taku Tlingit people. My ancestors originate around here in Juneau. My English name is Francine Eddie Jones. I have served and have been an honor and a privilege to serve for Central Council. I've reached my 30-year mark, and 26 of those years have been the director of our Tribal Family Youth Services Department, headquartered here in Juneau. I'm just honored and pleased to be here. My colleague and good friend, Nicole Borromeo, who you met, I think, previously, unfortunately wasn't able to be here first thing this morning. So I was volunteered and more than happy to be here to share with you testimony that work that I'm very passionate about. In my career of 26 years with Tlingit Haida, serving our tribe, I have overseen our department, which houses the Indian Child Welfare Act, Child Welfare Services. And in my 30-some years of career, which probably even 40, I have worked with ICWA since inception in 1979. So it is a federal law that I'm very passionate about. I have grown with it in my career, and I've had many opportunities to partner not only with state government here in Alaska, with Office of Children's Services, but also opportunities on a national scope to interface with other tribes who have their challenges and also their successes in implementing the Indian Child Welfare Act across the nation. We also have partnered very closely. Tlingit Haida, I think it's a good piece of the equation, is Tlingit Haida has been very fortunate for the past 19 years partnering with Casey Family Programs, who many of you have met in other forums where Lynn Biggs has presented on behalf of Casey as a private partner with the state of Alaska and the tribes. And I think Alaska is very fortunate to have that partnership with Casey, particularly with Tlingit Haida. They have provided us a lot of guidance, technical assistance, and opportunities for training, as well as opportunities for peer-to-peer connection with other tribes across the nation on seeing how they develop and implement their child welfare program. And Tlingit Haida, again, is an example of that. And as I speak to my comments, formal comments, and then I'll open it up for questions. Good morning, Chairman Zolkowski and other members of this Tribal Affairs Committee. As I say, I served with Tlingit Haida, and I'm just really honored to be here to offer my comments. I understand that you've had other folks come present to you. Most specifically, you had the commissioner, the previous commissioner, Valerie Davidson, testify on March 12th to speak to the compact. And I do want to pause to say, I think with her leadership was a real impetus to move this work forward in terms of the compact. But I also want to pause to provide some brief history to all of you. Many of us who are sitting around the table in this compact negotiations have been in a partnership with the state of Alaska. Tlingit Haida, for example, has been in a partnership with the state since 1984 during child welfare, specifically around how do we better serve our rural communities in Southeast. And then over the time, it has evolved to more specifically looking at Juneau, because this is where our caseload is. And the disproportionality is definitely very high here in Juneau, with about 72% of the kids in care here, specifically in Juneau, are Tlingit Haida children. Other tribes, in 1984, for those of you, I was very young in my career, but we were very fortunate back in 1984 to, for about 10-year period, where the legislators honored the work that tribes were trying to do back then, and actually we were written into the state budget as a BRU back then. And we had some pretty strong legislators that believed in the work and were committed that this work needed to move forward back then. So it has evolved. It hasn't just happened overnight in the last year and a half. And I think with, in my opinion, with the Commissioner Davidson in her role as the commissioner, really just helped solidify, hey, we have this work. How do we take it to the next level? Also, I want to comment that the other work that has been going on not only included Tlingit Haida in 1984, but Manilik out of Kotzebue, AVCP out of the Bethel area, and I'm trying to think of else, Tanana Chiefs out of Fairbanks. So we were the key. Most of us are larger programs and with larger caseloads. I also know that the current Director of Office of Children's Services, Natalie Norberg, and Nicole Borromeo with the Alaska Federation of Natives talked to you on March 21st. Like Nicole, I have been working with this compact from its inception, or when we started the process, and I serve as one of the elected co-leads for the tribes. So it's a pretty significant role in terms of participating in the process. We often talk in tribal caucus about what a successful child welfare program looks like to Alaska Native tribal governments compared to the state government. As you know, the state system is heavily focused on intervention. And that's and the reason is because they respond to calls that come in across the state. While OCS intervenes when they receive a notice that a child is being abused and neglected and frequently removes children from their homes. And I do want to pause to say that many of the children, when we're talking Alaska Native children, it's not abuse. Many times, more often than not, it's neglect. And I think it's important to understand that we're not talking severe abuse cases. We're talking neglect in terms of how do we intervene with families. The tribal child welfare system is more focused on prevention. Because Alaska Native tribes are made up of very large families, we often know when our families are struggling. Tribes do not want to wait for the official notice to intervene. Instead, our tribes and tribal organizations are ready and available to deploy wraparound services to try and prevent the breakup. And I want to pause to give an example. For example, with Tlingit Haida, how I refer to it is we want to move further upstream rather than waiting for a child to be brought to the attention of the state. Tlingit Haida, we deploy an evidence-based tool called the Structured Decision-Making Tools, where we have the ability when a family walks in through the TANF door, and they're at, and that's usually the door they come in because families are at need of housing, food, basic needs. So we deploy this assessment tool so we can determine whether that family is at risk of removal in terms of, and it's a score, it's, you know, it can get technical, but really what we're able to do early on is determine whether that family is at risk for any kind of level of intervention by the child welfare system. So when they score high or very high, we refer those families immediately to our child welfare program to start an intervention in terms of wraparound and accessing services, whether that's around substance abuse, around parenting, around dealing with trauma. It's just where are they at in terms of their lives. So our goal is to intervene with families earlier on. And the other tribe that is rolling out using the tool is actually AVCP, Alaska Association of Village Council Presidents out of Bethel. They came down and saw what we were doing and saw, and again, I think it's important, tribes in the compact are on varying levels of sophistication in developing their systems. Some are very at the infancy, some are at the middle, and some of us are providing interventions, providing programs, and have a more complex wraparound program. This example is meant to illustrate that the state and Alaska Native tribal governments think differently. It is no surprise then that tribes and tribal organizations measure success a little differently than the state might. While the compact is new, we have some early examples of success. First, it's important to note that 161 of the 229 federally recognized tribes are directly or indirectly through their regional tribal organization participating in this compact. And even for me, that was like, wow, that's a lot of tribes that we're connecting with under this compact. This has an incredible geographic reach. OCS, the Office of Children's Services, has struggled historically with servicing the entire state. Being able to communicate in real time with each region and many subregions is a benefit to our state. Second, meaningful collaboration and cooperation between the state and tribes will allow for tribes that are participating to leverage state resources around the tribal Title IV program. And I want to pause a minute to explain just very high level briefly. 11 of the 18 tribes, tribal organizations that are participating in the compact are currently in a pass-through agreement with the state of Alaska under Title IV, which is the ability for the state to leverage state dollars in federal reimbursement back to the state. And for those of us who have this agreement, we leverage those resources and those monies coming back through the state, which is federal dollars, we are able to leverage, and what many of us are doing is the commitment is to put it back into our child welfare system to develop our infrastructure. And we have been in that partnership with the state for 19 years, actually 20 years this October. So again, another opportunity to share with you that this didn't happen in the past year and a half. We've been working on this for a long time with the state government. Third, anecdotal evidence suggests that Alaska will meet the Indian Child Welfare Act's placement preferences in higher percentages under the compact. And we were on a teleconference call actually with Director Natalie Norberg earlier this week, and she informed the tribes that were on the call that with the Annie E. Casey report that goes out to all states is that Alaska is the highest in the nation for placing with relatives. So that's pretty incredible for Alaska to be nationally. And again, that reflects the hard work for many, many years working between the state and the tribes to implement the Indian Child Welfare Act in Alaska and to prioritize the importance of family and the importance of placing in the first level of preference, which is extended family. And I also want to pause to say I just had the opportunity to attend the National Indian Child Welfare NICWA annual conference, and it was 1,600 participants from across the nation to celebrate 40 years of the Indian Child Welfare Act. And I don't know how many of you realize that, but 40 years is a long time to really be struggling to continue to try to figure out ways to better improve state systems across the nation in working with tribes. I believe the committee appreciates the potential for success under the compact and the resolution that I just heard the summary of. And I'm happy to take questions, and I just applaud you for coming together and putting your heads together to say how can this work move forward. And I want to say in my total child welfare career working with a tribe, the compact work definitely has been a highlight of my career. And it's like finally we are moving forward, trying to really be creative, innovative, cost-effective, efficiencies, you name it, and to be able to move those tribes that are on that cutting edge of being ready to embrace this work and move forward with the full responsibility to support our families. But again, many of us, I think it's important to understand the tribes and tribal organizations that are in this compact have, we survive on the Indian Child Welfare Act federal funding, which has been stagnant for, I would say about 24 years of my career working with it. The last 2 years we've seen small increments of increase, but nothing substantial. Many of us receive across the state $29,000 plus per tribe, small tribe. You cannot even begin to fund a position. So state resources are really critical to complement this work. I do have this PowerPoint that I didn't know it was going to be up, but I also have it as a handout for the committee that I'd be happy to share. I can just breeze through it real quick. It's like 8 slides if you would like me to, or
I think if you just want to provide it to us, we can make sure to share it with members of the committee.
I will. I have it as a handout. So thank you. And again, I am here in Juneau. I'll be happy to come back, answer questions, speak to anything specifically. But again, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Are there questions from the committee?
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Ms. Jones, for being here. The current child welfare compact between tribes in the state, what is the time frame on that as far as when was it first enacted and when does it need to be renewed?
It is, we signed it in October 2018, and there's no end date until it's rescinded or the administration decides to end the compact, so there's no end date.
Okay. And one follow-up. Sure.
As just a point of clarification, before we jump over to your question, Representative Kopp, from what I recall from Ms. Borromeo's testimony is that it was signed in December of 2017, mm-hmm. but that to fully implement it, there are some sections within the compact that need to be reconsidered this summer of this year, from what I recall. But we'll make sure to circle back, Representative Kopp.
Actually was my question.
Yep.
Yeah, is the what needed to be reconsidered? You hit.
Yeah.
It. So I don't know what those sections are, but
we'll find out. Okay. We'll find out, and we'll be sure to circle back with members of the committee on that for early next week. Ms.
Yeah.
E. Jones,
I would just say that would be a very good legal question, and Nicole would be the best person to ask. Waiver of sovereign immunity definitely is one of the ones that has come back, but we agreed to what was in the current compact in terms of the limited waiver for those tribes that need to sign them. And then, I would definitely, Nicole would be a good person since she facilitates the process.
It looks like we have Erin Doherty Lynch, senior staff attorney from the Native American Rights Fund online, and I'm not sure, Ms. Lynch, if you're online, are you able to answer that question for the committee?
There are a couple.
If you could begin by putting yourself and your name on the record, and then go ahead and answer the question.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm cutting in and out. Can you say that one more time?
If you could begin by putting your name on the record, and then go ahead and answer the question.
Great, thank you so much. My name is Erin Doherty Lynch, and I am a senior staff attorney at the Native American Rights Fund. And our office is in Anchorage, and I am currently in Anchorage. There are a couple provisions from the compact itself. There's nothing in the compact itself that will need to be revisited or renegotiated. This is my understanding, that document sort of lives as is and in perpetuity, as Francine mentioned. There is some language in the SSFA that had been reconsidered or just sort of revisited between the state and tribes last fall. And my understanding is that language was more or less agreed to, that those new documents were signed and in the winter, and that everyone is moving forward. The state and tribes do get together a couple times a year to for negotiations, to negotiate new services to be provided. And so they are constantly meeting and constantly revisiting the documents that they've created and sort of saying, is this working? You know, can we tinker with this? How can we improve this? And so the documents are sort of open in the sense that if things aren't working, both sides can agree to revisit them. But my understanding is that right now, some of those issues that were revisited have been thoroughly discussed and agreed to, and everyone's moving forward.
Does that answer your question? Thank you for that clarification. And just looking at the frequently asked questions document that's we'll make sure to provide to committee members, Ms. Lynch, I just want to make sure that I understand correctly. So looking forward to 2020, it looks like the framework would be to revisit the capacity of tribes and possibly increasing scopes of work in partnership with the state. Is that a brief summary?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So there are, as this process has been moving and the compact is being negotiated, different scopes of work were developed and negotiated between tribes, I should really say between co-signers and the state. And so each of those times that the two sides come together to negotiate, they're frequently talking about what new scopes of work can we explore together, and part of that process is each co-signer deciding for itself whether or not it has the capacity to take on that scope of work. As Francine mentioned, the co-signers, are sort of all in different places. Some have very established child welfare programs that they've had for years and years, and some are growing their programs. And so new scopes of work are jointly developed, and then it's up to each co-signer to decide whether or not they would like to take on that scope of work.
Thank you for answering that question. And just for the committee members, this is the document that Ms. Eddie Jones is providing to us, and it does go through a timeline and as well as the various updates associated with that. So we'll make sure the committee has copies of that. Are there any additional questions for Ms. Eddie Jones this morning? Guyana, so much for being here and speaking to House Resolution 7. We appreciate your testimony this morning. We also have provided this document on BASIS, and I do just want to we do have some folks online, but because we have the FY20 operating budget on the floor and ongoing floor sessions expected this morning, we are unable to hold public testimony. However, we would like to invite our public testifiers to join us next Tuesday, April 16th. The committee will be holding House Resolution 7 this morning. Next Tuesday, April 16th, this committee will be hearing bills and resolutions previously heard. The time is 8:27 a.m., and this hearing of the House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs is now adjourned.